Welcome back to Bread and Butter, where we are serving up the basics for Hearthstone improvement. This is episode 68, and we have two special guests tonight. We have, filling in for Doc this week, we have Pilot. Pilot, how are you this evening?
Good, how are you?
I am fantastic, thank you. And we have a very special returning guest, World 8. World 8, how are you this evening?
Oh, I'm great. Happy to be here.
We're happy to have you. Why don't you tell us what you've been doing inside Hearthstone, World 8?
I have honestly been playing quite a bit of Wild. I was a little sick of seeing Instrument Tech on 2, Grasp on 3. It was feeling very repetitive. Wild is a place where it might be a little intimidating for some people, but the format's actually pretty diverse. There's a few tier 1 decks, maybe like 4, which is great. But tier 2 decks, there's like dozens and dozens of dozens. So you'll see quite the variety there. It could be very refreshing. It's in a good place right now. I am still playing a bit of Standard. I am enjoying the Zarimi Priest. It reminds me of decks I've enjoyed in the past. Naga Priest and Rage Warrior. A little bit of a learning curve. And it's been a good time in Hearthstone for me, especially because, you know, visiting Wild, things like that, is always a nice refresh as to, you know, sometimes you'll encounter cards in Wild and be like, I had no idea that existed. I won't see it outside this particular game, but, you know, good on you for playing it.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite things to do is play the really kind of, like, I've talked about this many times on this podcast, but I love playing Sunkeeper Raw Rogue because no one expects that coming. There's always that delay where people read the card and they're like, what is that? But it's a combo, so, you know, they have no idea what's coming. And then they kill it, and they forget that I'm just going to play it again when you bounce it back from the Rogue Secret, so.
One of the cool, so I ran into two really interesting Rogue combo decks in Wild, and so the first one was an Elwyn Boar recursion deck, and it was pretty complicated as to how it was set up. But it got the sword down on 5, and that got me good. The other one was another deck that basically generated Hook Tusk like 6 times on turn 5. I was very impressed using the new pirate with the mini. So it was a lot of plundering, and I was like, wow, that game's over. But that was really cool what you did. I don't know if I could do it.
What have you been actually playing in Wild? What are your go-to decks?
So Zarimi is absolutely nuts in Wild right now. If you want to play a tier 1 deck, it's a lot of fun. Very powerful. Zarimi is there. I've been playing a lot of Big Shaman too. But that was a very easy climb to Legend with that deck. It's very good into most of the field except Quest Mage. Unfortunately, I hit into a bit of a wall against the Quest Mage when I got to top Legend. It does very poorly into that matchup, but I know a whole bunch of other brews. Like, I'm playing Enrage. No one plays Enrage in Wild, but I am, and it's great because I can play all of my favorite cards and still be tier 2, going back to my point before.
So one final question on Wild. How is the bot situation?
Bot situation is actually really good right now. Didn't maybe encounter one bot on the whole climb to Legend, and I looked at HS Replay. On there, you can actually filter cards by how much they're played and what mode. And if you look at the totem cards in Wild right now, it's under 2%, where it was 20-30% back in the fall going into winter. So I think the bot situation perhaps might even be worse than Standard for people climbing to Legend.
Fair enough. I know I saw Celestial on post that he's banned over 1 million bots, and that was a thing. So good on them. It seems like it's a tough fight, but it seems like they're starting to turn the tide. But Pilot, how about yourself? What have you been playing inside the world of Hearthstone?
Yeah, I've been trying to balance out decks that I've played, especially the past week, just for THL prep. Did most of my climb the first week with the Token Hunter and then a little bit of other decks, but I put in about 50 games on the Hunter, so I needed to play other stuff to have other decks to bring. So a lot of prep with, trying out. I've been playing Painlock probably the most, but even so, I don't have more than 25 games on a class for the past week. There's just a lot of bouncing around, testing Paladin, just because I'm convinced it's not dead. It's different, but it's not dead. So trying a little bit of Edelweiss's excavate list. I tried the Vicious Syndicate mech excavate list, and it wasn't working as well, even though it felt like it should have performed about the same. The mechs, even though it lowered the curve, it felt like it made it more awkward. And I don't know if that was just variance or me or both, but I want to come back to that because prosthetic hand as a buff in Reborn is crazy when it works. It just didn't work as much as I wanted it to. So, and I know, Tito, you've been trying to make that work as well.
I even came up with the name. And actually, to be fair, I started with, it wasn't the same list. I had started with Mexcavate Rogue, but you came in to stream and said, hey, look at the Vicious Syndicate report. And they had Mexcavate, which is a phrase I coined like a month ago. So I was pretty sad about that. But I was also pretty happy about that. I have been trying. This is Try Hard April. It's been kind of my theme. And I've been playing, I would say, less silly decks. I've been playing less Paladin because I'm trying to play good decks and I'm struggling. I keep having these moments where last Saturday, I think I said on the last podcast, I got up to D2 rocking it with, what do you call it? The Highlander Warrior. And then Sunday I just fell right back down. And it just seems like that to this morning. I got back up to D2. I've been playing a lot of Wheel Lock and then fell back down. And it's just, it's been frustrating, but I'm still having fun. I'm not tilted out of my gourd. I'm enjoying the games, and it's just sometimes it's just I'm obviously there are things I could be doing better. I'm a better player than I have been playing this month, but I do like the idea of focusing on good decks, and I'm looking forward to seeing what I can do this week. We have that Demon Hunter nerf, which is coming, which is a Umpire's Grasp is going from 3 mana to 4 mana, which is looking to shift the meta, and we'll talk about that shortly. But more late, what have you been doing outside of the world of Hearthstone?
Outside of the world of Hearthstone, my wife took a week-long trip to Ireland, so I have two young boys. One's almost 7, one's a little over a year. So I had them for the week by myself, and it was great, but it kept me very busy. On the plus side, sort of within the world of Hearthstone, though, I actually did 2 streams because I had, the evening to myself. So I gave that a shot. It was fun. And, but wife's home and we're back in a groove. We had a birthday party for our son yesterday. He's turning 7 this week. And another different birthday party today, so the family birthday party and then the kids' birthday party, and so we're back in the swing of things, but we're doing well, and I'm happy she's home, although she had a great time over in Ireland.
Only a week sounds like a short time if you're gonna fly all the way to Europe.
Well, we live on the East Coast, so the flight is 8 hours, I think it was, which is still long, but it was manageable, right? Not like I think if you were coming from the West Coast to go to Europe, that would be quite the commitment. And yes, it was a little short, but everybody's got to work. You can't take forever off.
Yeah, that's fair. My wife is taking a trip with my kids in June, and I'm staying home with the dogs and working. So I plan on streaming a little bit more there. One thing I forgot to mention in the Hearthstone is this week I lost to the former Hearthstone pro Itachi. I went 1-3 against him, and I thought I played okay, except for maybe the third game, but he played really well. He got lots of good draws, but I was able to convert that into hopefully a guest appearance for him in a couple weeks. So we're looking forward to that. But Pilot, what have you been doing outside of the game of Hearthstone?
I've just been busy with work. We're getting close to the end of the school year, which means as a music teacher, that means all the performances all the time. So last week was a performance week for the younger grades that I teach. So I was busy with that, busy with other stuff for school and catching up on work there. I'm actually changing positions in the district from elementary music to band next year. So we were working stuff out with that, talking about things to do and doing interviews and just adding to the craziness. But counting down, I think we're under 30 days left. So counting down to the end of the school year and to summer and having some time to catch my breath, hopefully soon.
So with Ben, you're going to be doing like the football games and stuff and like the halftime shows and all that?
Yeah, so I've already been somewhat doing that because we're a small district, so we work together a lot. I've been as an assistant director for the marching band already, so I've worked with that group for the past 5 years, I think, already. So I know the kids, I know the program, and I've been in the district long enough to make it an easy just transition over and keep it going. But now it'll be me fully in charge of everything instead of just during the fall.
So now that you're in charge, what's your first program going to be and why is it Into the Woods?
So not in charge of that part of it yet. I still plan on being an assistant for a musical if it's not too crazy. But I cannot take over a different position and take over the musical in the same year. I would lose mind.
you misunderstand me. Don't they usually have a theme for the band for like the halftime show, like where it's usually kind of.
We're still working on that. The person who's in that position now is still staying in the district, just transitioning to only choir. So thankfully we've worked together really well, and she had some ideas for some music that I still just haven't had time to look at because of my performance last week. But trying to just find something right now, we're kind of looking at a theme of Marvel music, but not like the themes, pulling other songs from the soundtracks. So all the other stuff like on the Guardians of the Galaxy soundtracks, pulling those songs instead, just for something different, because I feel like every year for the past 5 years we've had someone do a superhero show.
But I have a request for you. If you have a big hand in that, you just need a transition where you have like maybe two bars of the X-Men cartoon theme.
I'll see what I can do.
All right, fair enough. And for me, my son also has a birthday this week. He's going to be 10. So very excited about that. He was supposed to go to this place next week because they have school vacation called the Great Wolf Lodge. But it was all kind of booked up and issues. So that's going to get pushed out. So he got some Pokemon cards. He's having a birthday party at the local trampoline park. So he's very excited about that. And it's all Pokemon all the way down right now. So, you know, we're enjoying that. But outside of that, it's just been working. We're hitting spring. So finally, no more snow and get to walk the dogs a little bit more. The chickens are finally laying a little bit more eggs, which is nice. And God, I live a pretty boring life outside of Hearthstone, to be honest. So our main topic today, well, this is not our main topic. Our first topic today is predicting the meta. Now, as we alluded to earlier on, there is a change in the meta coming, one card. Now, normally they don't make a change in the content patch because this is the patch coming out on the 16th. As we talked about last week, Duels is going bye-bye. Duos is entering the Battlegrounds. The Battlegrounds meta is also changing with lots of dragons and hunter change, as dragons and beast changes, and just a total overhaul. I believe that quests are going away. So it's going to be kind of a big shift there. But normally in these patches, they don't change any standard cards unless they absolutely need to. And they really felt that the meta was warping a little bit around, or a lot bit around, the Demon Hunter class. So we're going to talk about that a little bit. So this is going to be a topic that I think normally we try to stay completely evergreen or very evergreen. But I think talking about how a meta changes around nerfs is, I think, really good, because it's something how you can learn how to adapt your play. Because a lot of times you're playing that deck or you're playing a set of decks and you're feeling really good, and then the meta shifts and usually around balance changes, meta shifts, and then it's like sometimes you can just get into a spiral where it's like, I don't know what to do anymore, I lose. So the more you understand why things change, how they're changing, and how you can adapt to it, I think is very good. So as I mentioned, predicting how a meta shifts is important to you to succeed. Now, you can go and you can listen to the Vicious Syndicate report or read the report or the podcast or listen to Coin Conceit or whoever, and they're going to tell you, like, hey, now, like, for example, you'll hear that now that Demon Hunter is going to be hopefully weaker. I think it's going to be weaker. One mana on from 3 to 4 is a lot. What they'll tell you that, hey, like, Zarimi Priest is going to be really good going into that. But understanding why Zarimi Priest is going to be really good going into this, that's, I think, not, I don't think everybody understands that. I think people say, oh, you play this deck, now you play this deck. Okay. So, with Grasp going to 3 to 4, that's the only change. The meta right now is pretty, I think, what? Sleeper. Shopper DH is the only tier one deck. So I pulled up some stats here, and this is from Legend. Just Legend, the last 3 days. Shopper Demon Hunter is 56% of the meta, 56% win rate. And then everything is tier two. You got a sharpshooter derivative of the Shopper meta, which is interesting. That sounds like it's something up your alley, World 8. It's got Spell Token Hunter, Zarimi Priest, Pain Warlock, Highlander Demon Hunter, Wheellock, Rainbow Death Knight, and Buff Paladin, and Highlander Warrior. So let's start with our first question is, why does one deck matter so much? And the next, even though the next few decks are only a couple of percentage points behind, what does it mean when someone says it's meta warping versus meta defining? World 8, what do you think about that?
Sure. So when you have a deck, with it's, first of all, it's a strong deck. In this situation, we have a lot of mana cheap. We have tutoring. Typical indicators of something that's going to be powerful. We are looking at a nudge of a mana here. This will likely kill the deck. I'm going to make a bold prediction there. I don't think it's too bold, but it ruins the curve. It still enables the tutoring and the mana cheating, but a mana increase is one of the biggest hits you can do to a deck. When you have a deck like this, it becomes popular because it's powerful, and there are aspects of that deck that are powerful, and why it does well is important to understand. Shopper, in this particular case, is very oppressive to most wide board decks. It, because it can discover basically a double prison breaker, that will keep most board decks off the board while it's still pursuing an aggressive, predictable game plan. That aggressiveness also will take away from a lot of, you know, I'm going to play a little bit something more mid-range and slower. You're just going to get run over before you can even get to your game plan. So what this is doing is it's keeping most wide board decks down. Token Hunter is kind of an exception there because it has Saddle Up. But it's important, again, to understand why it is effective. This, on the other hand, allows for, you know, this deck in particular can be countered. It can be targeted. And so we're seeing a lot of Warrior and Rainbow Death Knight with builds specifically to target the most popular deck, which is very reasonable. And they have the breathing room to include a lot of tech cards that they normally wouldn't have, because first of all, this one deck is so popular that they don't really have to adjust for a wider spread of, you know, this other deck is going to exist, this other deck is going to, you know, run me over when I'm sitting there with Dirty Rat in my hand and I can't play it, because it would be a poor choice, or my Quartzite Crusher is effectively useless against a wide board because it's playing whack-a-mole. So we have, in my opinion, it's important to understand what the most powerful deck is doing to the meta that's keeping other decks down, what has risen to counter that, if that deck is targetable. Sometimes it's not. And those two factors, you'll end up with over half the field looking like the main deck and its counters. And that's what I would say is kind of what is meta-defining when you're starting to see over half the field based around one particular deck, and in this case, one particular interaction.
So that's, I think, warping, right? Because it warps the meta to be just fundamentally either that deck or the counters to that deck, right? All right, Pilot, what do you have any thoughts that we haven't covered yet on that part?
Yeah, I think that hits it right on between warping and defining when everything has to have an answer for that deck. And if you don't, you just lose. Then everything has to warp around it. And it doesn't matter how good some of these decks are. There's some really good decks in that tier two range that struggle against the Demon Hunter, but they're able to prey on other stuff that, you know, isn't as good, or maybe is countering Demon Hunter. But when, you know, obviously a lot of people have run towards or gone towards freeze to counter Demon Hunter to try to freeze their face before the weapon breaks. And when you have a card like Glacial Shard being in, I'm looking at it now, 16% of decks, which is still probably not enough, then that seems pretty warping for that card to come back that strong.
All right. So my idea for the change in the, is the nerf, my idea for the nerf here would have been to limit the pool of demons they could have got back from Shopper. So I would say you can't pull any demons that cost 7 or more, because then that would get rid of Mechtheridon, and or maybe you limit to it can cost 7 or less, because then you can still pull back Bassist. You still have a good, you know, pool, but then you don't limit the ability for aggro to exist. Do you think that would also have killed the deck, or what would your nerf idea have been to keep the deck viable while letting the meta kind of ease itself off of it and become a little bit more diverse? How about yourself, Worldly? Do you have any thoughts on this?
Yeah, so I'm actually a big Demon Hunter enthusiast. You know, I put together a list that ended up being, you know, pretty good. Back when Frost DK was, you know, the oppressive deck, Big DH actually ended up being the counter to that deck for various reasons. I was pretty proud of that list. And the one thing is that was a four set meta deck, really. None of the cards really changed after five set, six set. But the big thing is that the overall power level of the format got bigger, higher, which is fine. But the biggest problem is that the pool, the Outcast pool, got a lot bigger. And that deck relied surprisingly a lot on a very small Outcast pool. I think the increasing the cost was probably the safest change they could make. It reminded me of Bioluminescence change, when they're like, well, let's slow this down a turn. It's too fast. And that almost effectively killed the deck and also the Shaman class along with it. I thought it might be interesting to put all the Warlock demons in the pool. You know, a bigger pool, making it less predictable that you're going to get the big mag, is kind of interesting. You're not going to have the samey gameplay, because every once in a while you're going to hit a Flame Imp right off your Shopper, and you're like, well, that's, you know, okay, the stats are good, but it's not going to have this huge impact on the board. You might get the Queen, on the other hand, which is a very, very good card, but in general, making the pools bigger, less predictable, will weaken a power level of a deck that is trying to do one very specific thing game in and game out. I think there were some other proposals to make the weapon have three swings. I'm not sold on that, because you could just equip another weapon to break it. And there's creative ways to do that, more so than just swinging three times. You can see that from in Wild, that was a big problem with Twig of the World Tree, which would give you 10 mana crystals, and that completely broke Wild until they changed that, because that would require four swings, but people didn't swing it four times. They just equipped another weapon and broke it. So, you know, I think they went with the safest change. Unfortunately, it might kill the class in addition to the deck, but we'll see how it goes.
How about yourself, Pilot? Any thoughts on what they could have changed?
I think they specifically called out it being the safest change. I don't know who it came from originally, but I'm pretty sure I had seen Hat either tweet it or post it somewhere about they knew that it was drastic, but they needed to make sure it was an impactful change. Because if they go for something safe and smaller here and it doesn't work, then it makes it even worse. Because then it's two more weeks of the same thing. So they wanted to get something out there that for sure this is going to hit it. If it hits it too hard, we can fix it later. But this has to do something now. I don't think they wanted to make a change like what you were mentioning, Tito, because I think one of the goals of the two cards is for some sort of future big demon deck. It just feels like that was one of the design goals for it, while still having some flexibility to do something like it is now. The problem is, right now with the small pool, it's too powerful because it's too easy to get too big of a swing too early.
And I can tell you exactly what Hat said. This was in the Blizzlet Discord, so normally you guys don't have access to this kind of information, but I figure it's relevant here. Hat says, for some context, when we do a nerf, especially at an emergency timing, that has a both a goal and a need to make a deck worse, we do not aim for subtle. This is not Flesh Giant from 8 to 9. DH is currently extremely powerful in a warping way, and we need to stop that happening with a single change that we know conclusively accomplish that goal and meet that need. There are lighter, more clever, tricksy changes, but if we tried one of those and it didn't land, it would be bad. We would anger people. We'd get mocked and people would play less. We'd have to nerf the deck again and we'd lose out on the relevant data between that nerf and the next one since the decks would be hiding behind it. I do not know if Shopper DH will die. I hope it doesn't. I like the deck, but it might. We still have one shot to make a change. So because they're trying to do this merge change, they have to make sure that they adjust for it. And it makes sense. It's just kind of sad because it, as warping and kind of annoying as it is, how relevant it is everywhere, it's still a fun deck. And yes, it's not a very complicated deck, right? It's not very complicated. It's very, it's not a very high skill cap deck. There are good choices you have to make on your demons, but for the most part, it's play Instrument Tech on 2, play Weapon on 3, play Sharper on 4, pick something like Green Rag and go from there.
Yeah, I think the problem with that is the interesting games become the ones that you don't just hit the nuts, the ones that you actually mm-hmm. have to think about because you didn't get handed the broken discovers, and then you have to figure something out. Those games are interesting, and those games require a lot of skill to win. Sometimes you don't get the weapon. Sometimes you get both choppers beforehand, and you have to piece your way through, and then you get, you know, two tough crowds off of the discovers, and you have to find a way to win. But the high rolls are just so powerful, it had to go somewhere.
What I'm hoping is we see a little rise in Highlander, because I know that's a good deck right now, and I know it's still Shopper DH with, you know, you still play four cards that are duplicates and then you have, but I really like the Highlander Demon Hunter, especially when you have I had one game I remember where I played Kurtris, and I got rid of their Hogger, their Leroy, and something else, and it just cleared the hand out. And those games are fun. That's a fun deck. So I hope that kind of lasts. But World 8, what do we think is going to change in the meta now that they're getting rid of DH? How do we feel like this meta is going to shift?
So it's a great question. Difficult to answer. When we have this very meta-defining deck, it's encouraging other decks to try and counter it. As I mentioned before, with that target gone, do the other decks have enough power to sustain? Do they have enough popularity to sustain? I think we can expect to see something like Warrior. People have grown accustomed to Warrior. They're enjoying the playstyle. We'll likely continue to see that, despite if it's stronger or worse. There are decks that are being kept down that are popular that might not be great after a nerf, but will be encouraged by the window of opportunity. Decks like Rainbow Mage or Plague Death Knight, these are kind of historically popular decks, will probably rise and play again, even if they're not great. The question mark is, for people, are they really enjoying playing Rainbow Death Knight as a control deck. I'm sure some people are, but some people are playing it just strictly as a counter. The other side of that is, okay, well, maybe some of these counters like fade away because they're just not as popular. Some other traditionally popular classes or decks are going to increase in popularity. What we'll also see are some very powerful decks that are being held down by whatever this broken deck is doing that is particularly crippling for them. The prediction is that Zeremi Priest will do much better after this nerf. And if you look at matchup spreads from your favorite data site, that looks to be expected. Its worst matchup, the only red matchup actually, is getting nerfed. And so we can expect that deck to do very well. On the other hand, we can see other decks that are doing well despite the power level of the top deck in the format. Something like the Pain Warlock, also known as Custom Warlock by some circles, is, you know, it has an awful matchup as well. But again, another very powerful deck. We saw it this weekend in the Spring Masters Tour, even showing up in lists there, top levels of play. You know, Pilot had mentioned before playing Token Hunter. That is also a very good deck that, despite it having an even matchup into, you know, the most popular deck, it's also got a really good spread. So we'll see all kinds of decks that are kind of just waiting to become relevant again, pop up, become popular. I don't know if everyone's favorite deck will be powerful. I think there are a lot of people waiting with bated breath, being like, "Ooh, is this the moment for my Gaslight Rogue?" And maybe it'll be a good deck, but probably this won't be the groundbreaking moment for it, because everything's going to kind of shift around a lot. But you know, something like that has a much more even matchup spread. That's not quite as defined by these other decks. Could take a beating from something like Zeremi Priest taking a spike in popularity. Again, very difficult to say, but the most important thing for me is I look at what decks are going to benefit the most, what decks that are popular benefit. They might not benefit the most, but if they benefit and they're popular, we will see a lot of them. And then what are the counters that people are just kind of begrudgingly playing because they think it will get them wins?
And the interesting thing right now is we are going to see, we kind of have more than one data point happening right now, because normally we would just see changes because of the shift in the meta after a nerf. But we just had the Spring Masters Tour. So you are about to see a lot more Shaman. You are about to see a lot more Painlock. And you are about to probably see people trying to make, I don't know, maybe Odin Warrior work after that final game today. And we're not going to go into that because I can't even remember a bunch of the games. But that is also going to affect the meta, because people are going to try to play these tournament decks, which always a bad idea because those are teched specifically for a tournament. So you are probably going to see a lot more things like Speaker Stomper, which may or may not be relevant, but it's going to be relevant because people are playing these decks. So I think that's interesting. Pilot, do you have any thoughts on that?
No, I was just also looking through matchup spreads and just seeing, you know, I think there are some decks that will be able to come up and at least have a fighting chance now that Demon Hunter's a little bit weaker. Painlock comes to mind as probably the one that I'm most interested to see how it changes, just because that matchup against Demon Hunter is miserable, because it turns out both players hitting your own face is really bad. But it has a chance to maybe come up against some of the things that rise up in its place, like the Zeremi Priest. There are some decks that do have high popularity because of the meta being warped, that if, you know, Highlander Warrior and Rainbow Death Knight drop in play rate because they're not needed as much, then some of these other decks can have a little bit more breathing room, like, you know, a Sif Mage, like you know, some of these other, you know, aggressive decks that couldn't go as fast as a Demon Hunter and couldn't have the sustain for the Warrior, that I think things will shift. I don't think it's going to be huge at this point, but I think it's going to be enough to see this is where things can go in the future, hopefully.
Okay, but normally what we see, and it's not always perfect, but a lot of times when we have a balance patch, especially the balance patch that would be coming in, what, 3 weeks from now, 2 to 3 weeks from now, is normally they have a good amount of data, and not only do they nerf the outliers, the statistical outliers, the warping decks, but they also statistically say, well, if this happens, then these decks will fill the void and be too powerful. So we're also going to make adjustments to those as well, and thus try to give us a nice balanced meta, which I think they've done a really good job of on this, on the second balance patch, which is usually, what, a month, half after the iteration. But in this case, we're getting emergency patch. So we keep talking about Zerimi Priest. World 8, do you think we're just going to be replacing a one problematic meta with another? Like, because are we just going to now see, like, Zerimi Priest or something else become this meta warping tyrant because we didn't have the opportunity to do all this extra balancing?
It's possible. Again, it would only be for 2 weeks. One of the challenges with a deck like Zerimi Priest is when it loses, it feels bad. It's more popular than other decks like that in the past. This was a problem with Nagamage. This was a problem with Enrage Warrior. When it doesn't click, it feels like an arena deck. and those kind of decks are, you know, there's a certain popularity cap to them. It could be very overwhelming, though. I mean, Time Warp is a very powerful effect. But, again, it's one of those situations where player enjoyment with Sith Mage might drastically just override, you know, the power level of a good deck. We'll see. I find it hard to imagine that we'll have a Zerimi Priest Tyrant. Personally, even if it's the best deck, just because other players are going to want to be playing combo decks that are viable, and then people are going to want to be playing control decks. And I think it'll actually end up being somewhat healthy or healthy enough for a week. And then the next balance patch, hopefully they've collected enough data over the course of 4 weeks to give us something. And in my opinion, that second change is almost a terrific meta. And then the mini set comes out like 2 weeks after that, and then everything is thrown back into chaos. But that second balance patch, they usually have enough data to put the game in a really good state until it changes again.
And that's an interesting point you say. That's like you were talking about Sith Mage might come back. And that's a deck that's been around for a while that people love to play. But it's always funny that you always hear about decks that, like, Enrage Warrior, which was really good to play for pretty much the entirety of the last, what, year and a half, 2 years, yet people got bored of it. I don't know why. Why would you get bored of a deck that wins all the time because it's Enrage Warrior, but not bored of a deck that wins a lot because it's Rainbow Mage? Like, it's weird, that dynamic, right? It's like sometimes the deck just clicks with folk and they keep wanting to play it, and when it's good, it's good. And then some decks are really good, but people just don't want to play it. So I don't understand that.
Yeah, I think a lot of that comes from just the style of deck, because I was someone who bounced off the Enrage Warrior last year. I really enjoyed it during, is it Lich King? I really enjoyed it then before it became even better and more popular. But then for some reason, as it shifted, it just fell off with me, because it felt like you had the certain cards and that certain thing that you needed. And like World 8 mentioned, decks like that, Naga Priest, where if you don't draw the right cards at the right time, sometimes it just feels like an arena deck and you just lose and there's nothing you can do, compared to a Sith Mage that has so many discovers and so many ways to build a game plan as you go until you get to that finisher. Like, I loved Naga Mage just because it was that way. You had your plan, you had to get Spite Lash and Naga Spell a couple turns but there are so many discovers that you could find edges and matchups through those discovers. I found it really interesting compared to some of these other decks, and I think that's a big difference for a lot of players.
Plus, you don't want them, if it's your pet deck, you don't want it to be popular. You want it to be good with a low play rate. That means they won't touch it. Unfortunately, that didn't happen with Buff Paladin, but what are you going to do? So, if I want to have a good week in Hearthstone this week, should I be playing Zaremi Priest, or should I be playing what potentially could be a counter to Zaremi Priest? Like, should I be skating to where the puck's at, or should I be trying to, you know, hip check that deck and play something counter to it? What do you think, Worldy?
Well, I personally like to take the 48 hours after a balance patch to play my favorite decks. I have the luxury of access to good data where if I need to, you know, if I have a certain MMR that I'm hoping to get by the end of the month, I will grind that out. But the more I've played, the more I realize that I want to take advantage of those windows where it's a bit of confusion, where I can play my deck and do some more discovery. Say, does it still fit? Probably not. But at least this is my one chance to do that before it kind of settles in. Oh, this is the best deck, this is the next best deck, for whatever reason. If we want to find winning edges the most, you kind of want to skate ahead of the puck a little bit. And that's where I was mentioning, for the first 48 hours, you're going to, I'm expecting that we'll see what was popular in the past. People will want to pick that up again. We'll see a decline in what was the main counters to the Meta Tyrant. Probably because I don't know if there's really 30 to 40% of the meta wanting to play a control deck. that seems a little high to me. I feel like that's a lot of players just trying to target something. And we just had Pilot mentioned, we had a Masters Tour. A lot of really cool decks that were showcased on a high level of play. So I would expect those decks to be popular as well. I don't think you can be betting wrong by going with a strong deck that loses its only tough matchup. Zaremi Priest will find a lot of wins if that's a deck that you want to play. It's a great deck. I really enjoy that deck. But if you have something else that you feel like you want to explore, I had mentioned the Gaslight Rogue. I know a lot of people are pretty enthusiastic about playing a rogue deck of any sort. That's not the Zilliax scam. You know, just because they love that class and the Giants, that Miracle into Giants kind of game plan is very traditional rogue. And so I imagine we'll see a bit of that. Whatever reason, the data will shake out. The meta senses shake out pretty fast these days. By the weekend, there'll likely be a best deck that'll be identified. People will start targeting it again, and then we'll have another week before the next balance patch where you can either play that deck or play the next best deck. But, you know, I strongly encourage anyone for at least until Friday, probably before things are settled and VS comes out with a report, you know, play the deck that you want to play. If it's feeling bad, you know, you could put it down again and be like, well, it still was not the moment for this one. But, you know, play your Mexcavate Paladin, you know, give it a shot again. See if it'll click this time. I strongly encourage that of any player.
I can't do that this month because it's Try Hard April. However, I want a more definitive answer from you. If I want to get from both of you, if I want to say on Tuesday, target Zaremi Priest, I'm expecting to see it a lot. What deck am I playing?
Hunter.
Okay.
Hunter's got 60% into Zaremi Priest. He gets under it, and Zaremi doesn't run any AoEs right now to get itself out of that situation.
You agree there, Pilot?
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much anything where you can take and keep the board. Zaremi can't do it much against both in playing against it and playing it today to try to learn it. Painlock feels really good into it, just because you get bigger minions down than they can early enough and just win before they can have that big swing turn. Obviously, sometimes they hit the nuts. You have the turn three, you're facing down three or four thirsty drifters, and you just can't do anything against that. So they win those games pretty much every time. But an average game, something like Hunter and Painlock, you should have a good shot against it.
Even a deck that is 70-30, a 30% win rate, if you hit the nuts, you win that game. So, I mean, it happens. I wouldn't say the most interesting game that I saw during the Masters Tour was, I believe, Bunny Hopper versus Insane, where Bunny Hopper lost, but Insane had a board full of minions, and Bunny Hopper couldn't play a minion, so that way, because Bunny Hopper was playing Warrior, Insane was playing a Zarimi Priest, and he was waiting. Bunny Hopper was trying to find, I believe, Sanitize, or at least get that out of his deck so we could play Reno, but he continuously didn't play minions for them to clear one of their seven minions on board so they could play Zarimi. And it was an excellent little chess match, and unfortunately it didn't work out for Bunny Hopper, but it's those kind of things that I think that shows you the next level that some of these pros go. But yeah, there's always ways to hit the nuts, and there's always ways to kind of work around it. It's just how good you are, son, I suppose. So let's just wrap this topic up. World 8, you're kind of a deck innovator. That's been your thing, right? You kind of have been creating decks, and you try to push the envelope a little bit. What are some fringe decks on your radar that you think have a good chance that people aren't quite talking about yet? And why do you think they're going to be good after this Demon Hunter F?
Oh, I mean, I would have, before Pilot was started talking about it, and it was showcased at the Masters Tour, if it hadn't been showcased there, Pain Warlock has been kind of a, you know, on the rise deck. And I think it's going to be really strong. I kind of agree with that assessment. Personally, I'm going to be picking up some pretty scammy decks, like Drum Druid again. I love that deck. I mean, you think Pain Warlock put some stats down. Drum Druid doubles that in the same time period. Just no one can play it or cares to play it. It won't be popular. That'll just be me playing it, probably. But I'm also expecting... There's actually not too many aggro decks out there. Really, you know, Hunter, Paladin are the two big ones. That, you know, we're just not going to see a lot of aggro in the format. I'm a little surprised that Sludge didn't land a little bit better. It didn't lose any cards in rotation. But it's just not performing. I don't know. I can't think of too much in particular. But, you know, again, assessment of looking at Hunter, you know, we can say what's a deck that is maybe mid-range, like Reno Hunter, that'll do well into these kind of grindier decks that is able to keep Zarimi off the board, right? If you can control the board long enough that you can get into turn 6-7 where you've got a good game plan, and you don't have to be a control deck to do that. If you're able to establish board contention, at least, you know, you've got a deck that's worth exploring. We saw a control shaman actually brought to the Masters Tour. Very interesting idea. Same kind of philosophy. We don't have to pigeonhole ourselves into what we've seen. I think a lot of players get kind of stuck on that. I know that one player in particular is having a lot of success in the Excavate Rogue. They put a post on Reddit. There's all kinds of little gems out there. It's interesting to be like, well, what was oppressive in this meta? And a lot of it was big AoEs keeping wide boards down, either with Mag coming down from Shopper or all the counters ending up just having a whole bunch of AoEs in them. With a decrease in both of those, we might see a bit more board-based decks. But I think you know, for most players, they're not looking to innovate. If you are, you know who you are already. And you know who you're keeping an eye on for other deck building ideas. But nothing in particular comes to my mind except for, you know, we probably can go wide after this patch with a little bit more breathing room.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't necessarily know if I agree that, and I'm not saying you have more experience than I do, I think, but I think aggro could be really good, especially if Demon Hunter goes away or goes away mostly, and then as a result, maybe Control Warrior goes away. Then outside of maybe something like Painlock, that might still be good. Wheellock, that might still be good. I think a lot of the control maybe shifts out of the meta, and then maybe something like Aggro Paladin of some kind, or just some kind of aggro decks, maybe some things we're not thinking, could still be potentially good. Secondly, two other points. One, you can ask Pilot. I do sometimes play Drum Druid, so you are not the only one out there. I have the, and I like playing Zeremi a lot, but it happens to be in Dragon Druid. Because that's probably, you know, it doesn't happen all the time, but you can get Zeremi off of Dragon Tales, and that feels really, really good. I think that's a lot of fun deck. All right, so before we go into our actual main topic, do we have any final thoughts on the change in the meta? Pilot, why don't you start?
Yeah, I think just the breathing room of an aggro deck having slower access to an AoE, that's going to open up other aggro decks that couldn't compete with it. The ones that were able to, like the Token Hunter, as World 8 said earlier, you could because of Saddle Up, because you had sticky boards that they couldn't get through. I was having decent success with Dragon Druid against it. The stats don't say it, but if you could stick that board and then hit those early Dragon Golems, they're enough health that they don't get cleared by a mag, and you put up taunts in the way. But it was very specific board states that would fight against it. And now, if that's a turn later, that gives that so much more breathing room. I think Sludge is a lot better than the play rate says. And the stats have that, other than Demon Hunter. Demon Hunter it struggles against, but I think if we lose some of that, then Sludge will rise back up. It depends on if other go wide aggro decks take its place. If Paladin comes back stronger, then Sludge is going to struggle against that like it did before, just because Sludge doesn't like a bunch of one mana or one health Divine Shields. That was really miserable for that deck. So I'm most interested to see where Warrior ends up, because I think that that's going to be the next big meta player that needs to fall into place to see where everything else will go around it. If Highlander Warrior stays strong, then I think that the meta can adjust to it. Does it go back to Odin? Does popularity drop to let other decks come up? Because I think Control Warrior is still going to be popular because it's a deck that people do enjoy, I think, especially this version of it with Boom Boss. There's just people who want to blow up their opponent's decks. And that's coming from someone who has played a decent bit of it and normally doesn't like control, but it has enough that you do that I've enjoyed it. I think where that falls will shift everything else around, because if that stays popular, Wheellock is going to counter it. And then if that becomes popular, it opens up for those other aggro decks. So I think we'll be able to see things shift around. It just depends on how long we have them until the balance change in the mini set.
And I also enjoy that deck, and I don't usually play a lot of control, but it's just something nice about seeing those. You play Boom Boss, next turn you play Gaslight after you've already played Bran, and you just watch those things. Boom, there goes your Mel'Ganis. There goes your, not Mel'Ganis, there goes your Mactheridon. There goes your Yogg. There goes whatever. It's just fun to watch their hopes and dreams get dashed. Like, as one card at a time, boom, boom, boom. It is so enjoyable, and I think I will keep playing it. But the problem is, if that deck stays relevant, then so does Plague Death Knight. And that is annoying. So it's so interesting how these pieces all go together. Orly, any final thoughts on this topic before we move on to our main topic?
No, I think I expressed everything. You know, take the first few days before the weekend, and we start getting some 72-hour data sets that will indicate what the strongest decks are. You know, if you have a chance to play before the weekend, you know, play your favorite deck. see how it feels. You'll probably see a lot of variety of other people doing the same.
And from Bread and Butter here, we express that you play from the heart, not from stats. Unless you want to play from stats, because then you maybe win more. You lose a little bit more when you play from your heart, but sometimes it's okay. So our main topic today is a topic we've talked about a couple times, and I want to be clear here. We try to stay evergreen-ish, so our topics are often topics that you can revisit over and over again, regardless of the meta. It's a card game. There's only so many different topics we can talk about, so we're going to bring these topics back again and again. Hopefully we reach them. Because we have different people that we interview, I'm hoping that we get different perspectives and different ideas on these topics, and you learn from them and say, oh yeah, you get a more complete picture the more you hear about them and the more people talk about them and different people talk about them. So if you hear a topic, say, didn't we just talk about that a couple months ago? Maybe. Might have happened. But if we have an interesting topic, we're going to hit it again. And I hope you like it. And if you don't, let us know. Love the feedback. But tonight we're going to talk about something I struggle with. When do you go all in and when do you not? So how many times have you decided, you know what? I don't have lethal, but I can get them down to 2 health. I'm going to do that because I have that ability. And then I'll just, you know, win the next turn. And then you get them down to 2 health and then they clear your board and they heal up to 30. And you're like, well, there goes that. Should I have waited another turn to go all in when I may have gotten that extra piece that would have got me over the board? Or was that my best opportunity? And if I had waited, it wouldn't have mattered anyway. That is, I think, one of the hardest concepts to kind of figure out in this game. So, World 8, when we talk about going all in, what do we mean? Like, what are we talking here?
Well, specifically for going all in, this is kind of, we had a game plan, and this is the pinnacle of our game plan. We've committed to this strategy, whatever the board state looks like, however the game has come to this state. We had a plan, and we're going to execute it. We're going to do the bank robbery, like whether or not, you know, it looks great. This is our one chance to do it. You know, most games of Hearthstone only go 8 turns, right? Waiting a turn is a huge, huge deal. So if you decide to wait a turn to not commit to your game plan, because before you even start the game or when you start the match, you know, ideally you have a strategy for this match. You know, Rainbow Mage, like, I'm going to build up to the Sif turn. And I'm going to, that's my goal. I'm playing Odin Warrior. I'm building up to this is how I'm going to end the game. If I'm an aggressive deck, I'm looking to close the game out before my opponent can do the other thing. And at some point, we are hitting a critical turn where we need to finish our game plan before the opponent can take the game away from us. And we lose that entirely. That can actually be a lot different than I am going to throw everything at my opponent's face and they're down to 2. I've been in a lot of game states where my turn 1 decision is an all-in decision. I play a lot of really aggressive decks and tempoing a turn 1 clergy, for example, is effectively going all in. If they clear that clergy, the game might as well be over, or at least extremely unfavored. But if I put that clergy down in 1 and it lands for some reason, I was playing a game like this earlier where I had a power synchronize into a fan club, and like it was just going to be this beautiful thing, or I was going to just win it. And so I tempoed it, and then of course it got cleared. But if I hadn't done that, if I had saved on to that, I would have lost the game anyway. Right, so even on turn 1, in that particular game, I decided to go all in. Like, as they would say in poker, pre-flop. This is my strongest opportunity with the best play that I have. I think one of the challenges is this going to be enough? That's the question I believe you kind of posed, Tito. It said, you know, I know this is not going to be enough. This is going to get me all the way to the end, almost to the finish line, but then I might collapse. I might be right there, not able to finish this race. And there are a few ways to work around it, but in my opinion, going all in is saying I'm committing to this game plan. I am no longer trying to figure out my strategy for this game. I'm dedicating this particular turn to culminating my strategy.
So I think what you're saying is, if you had just one shot or one opportunity to seize everything you wanted in one moment, would you capture it or would you just let it slip?
You gotta capture it, man.
So I think a good example with this that I've seen myself is, let's talk about Zerini Priest again, is Wheel Lock versus Zerini Priest. Because normally my game plan is I'm going to try to keep the board clear and I'm going to try to control the matchup until I can play my Wheel of Death and then stall for a few turns until I win. But against Zerini Priest sometimes, and other decks, not just Zerini Priest, but if I can get a 15-15 on board that then, you know, through Loken, and then I can get another 15-15 on board, maybe my game plan now is I'm going all in on, well, I'm just going to kill them by making big threats and punch them in the face. And if I do that, and if I'm abandoning the game plan of the deck, but I'm now investing in this plan of maybe trying to put all resources to hit him in the face, I'm fracking. And then it's like, well, I have a choice between Wheel of Death or I have a choice between something that I can Loken, maybe that I'm going to make that whatever. Would you consider that kind of like deciding to go all in? Is that kind of what we're talking about here, or is that a little bit off?
Well, if you're asking me personally, I'd love to hear Pilot's thoughts on all of this. It's, yeah, we've, you know, there's been a little bit of a scramble and, you know, we've ended up in a completely different state, but we've assessed, we have a strategy now, and now we're going to commit to that strategy. You know, we've pivoted or whatever you want to call it, but now we're committing fully to this new strategy. And you don't have to go all in with that strategy, but oftentimes, in my opinion, what I always like to think out is, what is the most powerful thing I could do this turn and the next turn, right? And frame everything in that. And that's kind of when I'm making those decisions. Is this what I'm committing to? Again, there's only, Wheel Lock goes a little bit longer. But there's only a certain number of turns in most Hearthstone games. And, you know, you have to have a pretty compelling reason to wait.
That's fair. And a lot of times I think, like, it comes down to the beatdown aggressor. Are you the beatdown or are you not the beatdown? And sometimes you're not the beatdown most of the time, but in a certain matchup, you're like, well, I have to be the beatdown here because otherwise I'm going to give them too much time in order to win. Pilot, what are your thoughts on all this?
Yeah, I think jumping right off of that, it also depends on the type of gameplay that your deck is. There are some decks that are a lot more straightforward, and there are some decks that are a lot more dynamic with your decision making as you go. Those more dynamic decks, I'm going to use Zerini Priest as an example. Sometimes you have to decide when, you know, it's not when you're going in for lethal, but when am I going to go in on this big board, empty my hand, and see if it sticks? Because if it sticks, I win. If it doesn't, I'm in trouble. And there's plenty of times in that to where you're just kind of playing chicken with a control warrior saying, if you have it, you have it. If not, good luck. And those are really interesting decision points, and kind of get to some of those probably later. But then you also have aggressive mirrors where sometimes you're the one who's controlling board. You're making sure that you stay ahead. And then you have a decision to make to say, you know what? I'm going to flip the switch. We're going face, and they have to deal with it. And now it's their problem to figure out whether or not they're going to be able to come back or not. Switching from, okay, let's make value trades, let's clear the board, let's keep ahead, to where now I have enough on board, ship everything face. I'm thinking like a paladin with Crusader's aura up. You get that down and everything goes face unless you're going to die soon, and you flip the switch and go all in and make them have an answer. Because sometimes if you wait too long, you lose that chance.
Well, and here's the thing with that, and this is something, it's a mental game. This is like, I would say 80% mental, because if you have experiences where if you go all in and they have that answer, you go all in against Warrior, they have sanitizer, bellowing flames or whatever like that, or they have the worst one, Trial by Fire, and you're like, they have it. And then the next game you kind of make your play and they have it. And the next game you make a play and you have it. It's still the right play, because if they have 20 cards in their deck, they may not have it. So my opportunity is to play these cards now. If they have it, they have it. But if you wait to do your, to go in to make that aggressive play, then you're giving them the opportunity to find that card or another card that would be answer that. Whereas if you make them try to make them have it, then you have more opportunity to success in a lot of cases when you don't. And this is, again, we talked to Ron Mexico about this a few weeks ago, and it all depends. It's always, every situation depends. And it's like, we can't give definitive answers on things because, well, should you go, you all depends if, you know, what you have in your hand, what you've seen them play, what you know they have, did they forge, did they have the answer last turn when you did something? Well, maybe they didn't, but maybe they were holding it back to try to bait you into kind of overcommitting. It all depends, and it's interesting. So it gives you a headache just thinking about it. But I think the hardest thing to get over is relying on the experiences you've had recently versus what might statistically be the better options, because it's hard to not just feel something based on, the last three times I ran into this, they had Trial by Fire. So you're just like, you know, you're like, I'm not even going to bother. They have Trial by Fire. It's like, you have to get out of that mindset. So without being a grandmaster, what do you think there are some simpler things that people could think about when they're trying to go all in or not go all in a matchup? Worldly, what do you think?
Well, I think, actually much credit to Ron for this is, one of the questions is, do I have to win next turn? Can I win over two turns? Ron is often a big proponent of, like, well, I've got two turn lethal. He'll say a lot of times, where it's I'm setting the jab for the uppercut, and it's a very strong line to always be threatening the finishing blow, even if you can't complete it in that time. I think, especially if you could think, all right, in two turns I win, how do I get there? That's a great start to being like, well, how much do I commit now? The other question is, do I win if I don't commit? If we decide to hold back, is there still a winning path? The challenge with, you know, facing a control deck like Warriors, you're going to give them the window of opportunity to draw. I think that's one of the biggest things that's maybe underappreciated, is if we do not pressure, we give the opponent a chance to pursue, you know, progress their own game plan. If we're not applying, you know, if we're not saying, all right, we're pursuing ours very aggressively, whatever our game plan is, maybe it's, you know, minions on board, maybe it's a combo, right? Like we're playing Nature Shaman and we're like, well, here we go. I've drawn like half my deck and I've got a flash of, you know, flash of lightning, you know, you better step up with whatever you're doing. Now's the time. Think about what, for an average player, what are my next 2 to 3 turns look like? Can I win in that time frame? How much do I need to commit? And if I don't commit now, what does the rest of the game look like 4 to 5 turns from now? Especially with against the deck that would be what would we call not the beatdown, is, you know, they have an inevitable win condition. With Warrior, you know, they will win eventually. They just have to get there. So for me personally, I would recommend, what's the strongest play that I can make over this turn or the next turn? And if I do that, you know, if they don't have an immediate answer, do I win the game? And oftentimes I will go with, I will make the strong play and force my opponent to show up.
But at some point, so yeah, I mean, I guess it doesn't matter, right? If like you don't go all in, then you lose. At what point do you say, well, maybe I go kind of in? and try to bait out things versus, like, so a lot of times, like Warrior's a great example. You face Warrior, they have, like we've already mentioned, they have Bellowing Flames, they have Sanitize, they have Trial by Fire, they have Reno, they have Boom Boss, they have Aftershocks. They have all these things that are just going to kind of ruin your day. So at what point do you kind of say, we were talking about going all in and not all in. At what point do you kind of say, well, I'm going to go a little all in and kind of try to figure, bait this all out, and maybe then I can have another opportunity to go in a little bit more. Like, how do you figure that out?
I think, as you mentioned before, reading your opponent is extremely important here. If they seem desperate to remove whatever you're throwing at them, that means they're likely to run out of answers, right? If they seem to be very comfortable with you doing your game plan, they're not in any rush, you know, you're probably in trouble because they probably have all the answers and they don't really care. In either case, actually, you should be motivated to pursue your game plan aggressively. You showed up with this deck for a purpose. Pursue that purpose. In terms of how much do we commit, I think, you know, it's, again, every game's different, but it's pretty easy to assess. If I was on the other side of the table, does this look like a lot of pressure? You know, like, even if you're not looking at the numbers and things like that, is this a threatening looking board? Do I need to, you know, put more than that on the table? And the answer is usually no. You know, and, you know, you could take another swing at it. Oftentimes, you don't really have more than two chances, right? You'll have one chance and then the next chance. And most games are that. You might be playing a more dynamic game than that, or game plan than that. But for most decks, they have their main strategy. They can probably try to do it twice. And that's really most of the chance that they'll get before their opponent also tries to do their strategy twice, you know, in that same time frame. So that's my general suggestion is think about what you're going to be doing over the course of the next 2 to 3 turns. And if that doesn't work out, what does it look like? Do we lose the game anyway?
So you're saying, look, if you had 2 shots or 2 opportunities to seize everything you want. Pilot, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, it's a lot of planning ahead and a lot of reading potential, you know, opportunities that your opponent has. It's really easy. We've used Warrior a lot because they normally show what they're going to do most, because Bellowing Flames and Sanitize are both Forge cards. So if you see a Forge on 2, you know one of those is coming. So can you follow your game plan and play around those? Sometimes you can, sometimes you can't. But if you don't do anything, then you're just doing their work for them. And I think that's where a lot of players get stuck. Is, oh, I know that they forge, I have to be careful how much I play out, and then they never have to use it anyways until you've done that for 3 or 4 turns and say, finally, okay, whatever, I'm going to go in, and now they reno you because you waited that long, and now they still have that clear later on. It's really easy in other decks, though, to go in, like the Dragon Druid that I was playing, the Jombre version, where it's really easy to dump your hand if you have Magatha there, and you can say, okay, I can go all in here because I have a hand refill and I can get another turn, compared to other decks where, you know, Hunter, you go all in and then you're just out of stuff and you sit there top decking. So playing smart with when you go in is definitely important. You don't want to toss out a couple things that you know that they're going to clear because they have it on board or they have this, and then you're losing important pieces. What you start to build with, I think, is super important. But sometimes, like World 8 said, sometimes you play out Clergy on 1 and say, if you deal with it, great. If not, then I get to accelerate my plan. And a lot of times you can get a good read on whether or not that's going to be successful or not. Based on what they've done, what their deck probably is, and kind of finding those spots to try to push a little bit more than you might normally.
One of my favorite games, I lost this game, but not this season, last season. I played Ron Mexico in THL the last 2 years. I just kind of lined up that way. And one game I had, I lost, but I knew he had Bellowing Flames. I knew he was Forge. But like every turn, I played in a way that made it so that Bellowing Flames would be awkward and wouldn't fully clear it and made it difficult for him. So he was just like, I talked to him afterwards and he was just like, you know, it just like, I was getting frustrated because every single time it's just, you made that awkward and it was like, I couldn't use it. So it's to think about like that. Well, okay. What's the clear? What clears do they have? What options do they have? Oh, Bellowing Flames. Okay. So that's going to do 5 damage and then it's going to do 5 damage after that. So how can I make that work for me in a way that maybe it's awkward for them? Maybe it doesn't work out for them. So, you know, that's just another aspect, but, Orly, what are that? These are the basics. Are there some other kind of more advanced thoughts that people should have when they're deciding whether or not they should, go all in or not?
I mean, I think that's still more than most players do, is assessing, where their opponent's at and what their next, you know, 2 to 3 turns look like. I think it's maybe a little unfair to say that, but, you know, saying, well, what's my game plan for the next 3 turns is more than most. And I think most players, I'll watch streamers and they don't even talk about what their opponents might possibly have. They're talking a lot about what their own game plan is, what they have. But, you know, thinking, and again, yes, the Warrior one is kind of obvious with the Forge, but, you know, I'm going back to like, were they really desperate to like dirty rat early? like, are they really that afraid? They must be afraid of something if they're playing that, you know, pretty early in the game. So yeah, I would start there. You know, I don't have much more advice beyond that personally. Other than just, you know, a little bit of planning goes a long way.
My favorite, if we're going to talk about going all in, my favorite is playing Hunter and you have Slither Spear on 1 and either you're on the coin or not on the coin, but you Slither Spear, clear it or don't clear it. They don't clear it. You can banana, coin, banana, hit him in the face. What are you going to do about that? And that's usually, if they solve it, maybe you're done. But most of the times it's like, what are they going to do with that? That's just gross. Pilot, are there any other thoughts you have as far as like maybe something that we haven't talked about yet in regards to going in?
Yeah, I think 2 other things that I normally try to think of, 1 in game, 1 after game. In addition to planning, you know, what am I going to do the next 2 or 3 turns? There's also sometimes where you can think about what play can I make that makes it most awkward for my opponent to deal with it? Is that, you know, making a board with all different health totals because of Bladestorm? Is that doing death rattles so that if they clear, something else comes out? What can I do that makes this the most difficult for my opponent to deal with it? And sometimes that lines up with your best play already, and then it's really easy. But sometimes then you readjust and say, this is what I was going to do, but this is almost as powerful, but is more likely to work, and kind of balancing those high risk, low risk situations to give yourself the best chance. Then afterwards, you're going to go all in and you're going to make plays, and sometimes they're not going to work. And sometimes it was still the right play, and knowing that and making sure that you don't use that good or bad in your next game and when you're evaluating decisions is just as important. We just did yesterday, Tito, myself, and MTC, we did some replay reviews from my THL matches, and there were some plays that we made that some of them were the right play and they didn't work. Some of them were the wrong play and it worked out. We kept a Molten Giant in a hand that we probably shouldn't have, and then I got dirty ratted because I didn't expect it. That's not the right play. I shouldn't do that, but it worked. But I can't keep that in the back of my head of I'm going to keep Molten Giant every time because it worked this time. Same thing goes the other way. You can go all in on a board, make them have the one card that deals with it, and they have it. make them have it the next time and the next time, because that's probably still the right play.
And what you said too is make it like we've talked a couple times about this, about making it awkward. Like, you have to try, and it's hard. I'm not saying that this is easy. I make so many mistakes all the time. And even the pros, I watch Pocket Train, he makes mistakes. He's like, oh, I should have done this. Like, let's say your opponent, you're playing a warrior, they have the 3/3 elemental on board, right? That draws a card, reduces the cost of a fire spell by one. You have a 3/3 minion on your side. You have a location, the warlock location, you're playing something like that. And you play the 7/7 and you play the rush guy. And you're like, well, if I just run the 3/3 into the 3/3, I then have 2 7/7s. Maybe that's great because it'll get you more damage, but you just let them have the ability to blade storm both of those down. Whereas if you would have run the rush guy into the 3/3, now you have a 3/3, a 7/4, and a 7/7, and that clear is no longer there. So this is kind of a little off topic, but yeah, it's just you have to kind of, the more you can think about what they can do and how you can make that awkward. Maybe that should be a whole topic. It's like making things awkward for your opponent. I kind of like that. I wonder who we can have on to talk about that. But yeah, it's just you got to think about a lot of things. So I guess Ted Lasso said it best, is be a goldfish. So how many times... And we've all done it, right? How many times have you gotten, we talked about this right at the start, you get your opponent down to one health because you're like, I don't have lethal. I don't. Like, I can get him down. It's 29 for sure. Get him down 28. And you're like, I'm almost there. Do I do it or do I wait to see what I draw next turn? Because that is, I think, the hardest thing to kind of decide, because you want to get them there, but if like you spend all your opportunity, you play your spell damage minions, you play your flash of lightnings, you play your whatever, if you're playing the shaman or whatever, not, and you get them down to one and then they heal back up, you feel like, well, I made the wrong play. But it probably if you evaluated what you had, what you know you have left, and what your best chances were, maybe the going all in was the right moment. If they could deal with it after that, they were going to deal with it anyway, right? So, I don't know. You guys have any final thoughts on this, World 8?
Well, I mean, I think going through and reviewing and being like, was this the right decision? It can be very frustrating to be like, oh, they had it. And sample size for individual experiences can feel very tight. Could feel like, oh, this is just, I'm giving up on this whole idea because I keep getting cleared and cleared and cleared. But yeah, you gotta assess it, and you know, I ideally take a look after the match and say, well, they didn't play a single draw card, you know, they did a full mulligan. It's pretty unlikely that they had exactly the right thing when they did, but they did. And, you know, just kind of take your lumps and say that was the best that I could do, given the information that I had, and that was the correct play. And if that exact situation comes up again, do that play again, because the odds are good. And that's what you're playing against, is, you know, it's not going to be perfect every time, but you want to play for when your odds are going to be the best.
And you have to remember that even if you make the right decisions, it doesn't mean you win. One of the games we reviewed with Pilot MTC... by the way, MTC is going through a rebrand. But one of the things that we saw, like, it didn't matter what you did in one of those games, they had the answer to your deck. So you could have played perfectly and it wouldn't have mattered because they had the solution to everything. And that doesn't mean you made the wrong decisions if you lost the game. It means that they just had the answers. They were the alpha in that matchup, and that's all you can do. Doesn't mean that's going to happen every time. It's important to evaluate, like, hey, did I make the right choice and I just lost? Or did I make the wrong choice and I just lost? Or did I make the wrong choice and won by luck? Or what would have been the more optimal play there? Even if I would have lost that matchup, if I would have not kept that Molten Giant, maybe I lost that game because they dirty ratted out something that was like a 2/3 or something like that. But was it the right play? in a wide variance of games versus that one specific moment. And that is really, really hard to do. And especially, it's really hard to forget about. You can win 17 different games by playing right, being aggressive, making these right choices. You remember that game you lost because they had exactly what they need. And it's hard to get out of that mindset because then you're always like, hey, they're just going to have trial by fire. Right? I mean, how often do you just... And then when you're making a play and you're just like, well, of course they had that. You know, I knew it. It doesn't mean you made the wrong play. So you can learn just as much from wins as losses and focus on that. Pilot, you have any final thoughts on this topic before we move on?
Yeah, I think that's super important. Just use the tools that you have. And I think, you know, the players that are going to use a skill like this are the ones that are going to do that. You're not going to be able to play around things if you're not paying attention. If you finish your turn and then you're doing something else in between, which we all do. I do that plenty of times where I have Hearthstone up and then I'm watching TV or watching a stream or whatever. And then I look back and think, how did my opponent get this board? What happened? And then you can't see it in the, you know, sidebar. But, you know, if you're going to try to play around stuff, you have to pay attention. And a lot of those have different cues to say, oh, they've had that card for a while, or, oh, they are drawing for this and things like that, that help you make those decisions. And like we said, sometimes they work, sometimes they don't. I use Warrior a lot because that game Tito was talking about was a game I was on Hunter and I was against Warrior. And I thought that I did a great job at playing threats every turn and not leaving myself, you know, too out to dry if it got cleared. But it was just Bladestorm into Bellowing Flames into Sanitize into Reno, and there's nothing I could do. I made the most tempo I could other than holding an emotional support coin the whole time. So I just never played the coin, I think, the whole game, but it's okay.
And I had the exact opposite of that, right? Like I had a game where I was a little, I got too greedy with my clears and I said, I can save the file for one more turn. Mm-hmm. And I should have played it right away because I was playing against a Hunter and I gave them the opportunity to play Saddle Up. And I thought I had a really good hand in that matchup because I ended up with a second defile. I had Drain Soul. I had everything. I felt really confident that no matter what happened, I was going to be able to deal with it. But because I didn't take that one turn to kind of almost go all in as far as clearing and keeping them off the board, I decided that I'm going to try to be a little bit more value, get a little bit more value out of this. Mm-hmm. And it just backfired. And one last thing I will say is that just because you review a game, like go over your games, talk to people, come to my stream, we'll talk about it. World 8's apparently streaming sometimes when his wife's out of the country. Go talk to him. He loves talking about this stuff. It doesn't mean you can come to a consensus right away. It doesn't mean that you can look at a board state, even not in that 2 minutes before the rope happens, and understand the exact right play. Even the pros will sit there and talk to each other and debate, say, well, should I have played the boom boss? Should I have played the whatever? Should I have armored up? Should I have done this or that or the other? It's not always definitive. Sometimes it is, but sometimes there's a lot of room for debate, and that becomes information that you gather over time, and then you learn. It's like, well, I've done this 3 times, I've done this twice, and it always seems to work out if I do this, or it works out more if I do this. It's experience, and you just learn. So does anybody have any final thoughts before we wrap up tonight?
Yeah, I think the going with all this and making them have it, I think for me, there's been one exception. This is very much current meta, and that is turn 8 Reno. Just because at that point in the game, they're likely to have drawn. And that's why we talk about going in soon enough before they give them before they have an opportunity to draw to all those clears. But if you're going into turn 8, at this point, if you have a gut feeling that they're a Highlander deck, you have to have that in mind. So going all in into a turn 8 might not be the best thing to do. That's, to me, one of the exceptions, just because it's common enough. But also going off of something that you said of, you know, am I only remembering when it doesn't work out? And I think that that's a big thing. Also, we remember the games that we were miserable because nothing worked. but we don't remember the games that we went all in and they conceded because they didn't have an answer. Because you don't remember the games that people concede unless you did something really cool beforehand to make them concede. And they were conceded because, you know, you had six Neptalon hands on board like I did earlier in Wild. You just don't. So trying to mentally keep track of those is also super important.
And this is a little aside from that, but you want, if you have enough reload or you have enough to kind of go in after the Reno or survive after that, like, even though I hear what you're saying, you might, if you have nothing else, make him have the Reno, and if you lose, you lose. But yeah, there's other times where you might say, I need to play enough to make sure they play the Reno, so then I can continue with my game plan mm-hmm. after that. And I think that sometimes it's hard to do that. How about yourself, World 8? Any final thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, also, you don't have to always just go all in and ship it. That's the other part of it, too. You know, powerful plays don't require complete commitment. Again, going back to what I was saying before, you can say, well, I'm going to have a string of three powerful turns, and that can be just as much, you know, an all-in decision as anything else. If you, you know, or like, I don't know if anyone plays poker, but in poker, you know, you could just put all your chips in the middle, or you can have this decision, well, I'm putting most of my chips in the middle, and if the next turn, I'm putting the rest in, well, I've effectively gone all in, even if I haven't this turn put everything in. But those are the two, like, that are, it's a sequence of powerful plays that's most likely to win me the match.
Now, are you talking about poker or talking about Bellatro?
any game in general, right? You can mm-hmm. have powerful plays, and if you sequence them together, you might have what they call tempo.
All right. So that was a lot. We've talked about a lot of Hearthstone tonight. We've definitely hit our 70%. If anyone's listening, we still like to get into the creator program, just so you know. And hopefully that happens. But anyway, now that we have grilling season coming up, normally we ask people about their favorite dessert. We've already talked to you all about that. I believe World 8, I forget what yours was, Pilot, but I remember World 8 was key lime pie, I believe. No? Okay, I'm wrong. What was your dessert?
It was moose tracks ice cream, man.
I have some chocolate moose track ice cream right now. I'm going to have a little bit after this.
Yeah, that's great.
All right.
That's good.
So I'm going to ask both of you this. Pilot, why don't we start with you? With grilling season coming up, if we go to your house for the cookout, what's on the grill?
I need to get a new grill just because I got a cheap one when I moved out, and I've gotten frustrated with this half being burnt and this half being raw.
Let's just say you have
I'm looking forward to doing that, and now you're putting that back in my head. But especially with me living by myself, I grilled just a ton of like hamburgers and stuff over the summer. But I think my favorite to do is kebabs, steak kebabs with tomato, onion, peppers. That's definitely my go-to for something that's not just a burger.
I'm going to say this. One thing I've learned about grilling in my 48 years on this planet is kebabs. You don't want to do kebabs like they do. Like you have the seasoning. I mean, you have the meat and the vegetables, they cook at different times. So I have found that if you do the meat kebabs and the vegetable kebabs separately, so they cook more evenly in the right time, and then you just combine them at the end, it works out a lot better. I mean, don't do that if you don't want to. Sometimes you got to go all in. We've talked about that. But I feel like sometimes one thing I've learned in my experience is that it comes out much better is if you do the vegetables and the meat separate, because they don't always cook on the same rate. World 8. What are we having at your barbecue?
Probably smoke some brisket for you if you came over. I got a nice little smokehouse that I got up back. And I do ribs in there, too. We got a nice grill, but I really enjoy using the smoker, above all.
I can get behind that. So if people want to come and experience your smoker brisket, or at least they want to talk to you about it, where can they find you on social media?
I am very active on Discord and most of the usual Hearthstone channels. You can find me at World 8. DM me directly. I'm happy to talk Hearthstone. I will post a bit on Twitter, World 8_HS. And then I'm also on Twitch. I've done a tiny bit of streaming. Hopefully going to do some more. Work out a schedule with my spouse and maybe do some Sunday nights. It seems like a pretty empty time. And that's also world8_HS for those social media handles.
Fantastic. How about yourself, Pilot? Where can people find you?
You can also find me around in various Hearthstone discords, Pilot712. I don't post as much just because normally I'm lurking and busy, but try to engage when I feel like I can, and feel free to DM, things like that. And then also on Twitter at the same handle, Pilot712.
And you can find Doc McButt at Doc McButt on Twitter, and apparently Blue Sky, he says Twitch, but you're not going to see him on Twitch. World 8, and oh, I'm sorry, I'm Tito Santana HS. You already know that. You can find me on Twitter and Twitch. I stream way more than I should for the audiences I pull. I do it more because, you know what, I want to play Hearthstone anyway. If some people come hang out with me, it's great. So I'd love to have you come hang out with us. If you disagree with anything I've said on this podcast, or you agree, come tell me about it. I'm here, usually 9 to 12 Eastern Standard Time, almost every night, unless I'm recording this or doing something else. But World 8, you get any shout-outs this week?
Oh, it's embarrassing, but, you know, big shout-out to you, Tito. Well, it's not embarrassing. It's just like, you know, it's like wearing the shirt to the band concert. But I appreciate the chance to be on here again. I know last time we had some technical issues, and you were through them incredibly. I did the whole episode off my phone. I don't know how you pieced that together. So that's a belated shout out from a little bit ago. But you know, I do want to put a bigger shout out to the whole Hearthstone community outreach team. I think they're doing a really good job. You get situations where we're in this tough meta, so you have someone like Ridiculous Hat getting a lot of heat for something that they weren't responsible for, and I think the whole team's taking it with a lot of grace. So shout out to Hat, I suppose, too, for just being a great community manager.
Those are some great parallels you just drew there. How about yourself, Pilot? What would you anybody shout outs this week?
Shout out to MTC Master Tour Champion for the replay review that we did yesterday. It's always great to get insight from someone else on your game because they're going to see it differently, and it was just a really good conversation. We were chatting for a solid 45 minutes on your stream last night about four games, just bouncing ideas around, looking at why we did this, why we didn't do this, and it helps everyone become a better player when you're able to do that. And sometimes it's just really nice and validating to have someone else say, yeah, you did the right thing, it just didn't work, or you know, you made a couple small misplays but you didn't make a major misplay, you know, in these. And that's sometimes you just need that validation no matter what level of play you're at. And then also to the all of the Hearthstone team that worked on duels with that going away, I definitely enjoyed my time with duels when I would have time for it. And when I was, especially before when they had so many different curated pools and, you know, had the time and resources to really put into it, into making it something interesting and unique. I did that with my tickets rather than Arena and had a ton of fun with it. And even if I haven't played it for a while, definitely like sad to see it go, and I hope that now they're able to make other cool stuff.
Fair enough. Well, World 8, thank you for being here. Appreciate you. Pilot, thank you for filling in at the very last minute. About an hour ago, I found out Doc might not be able to be here. So I said, Pilot, you want to fill in? He's like, sure, I can do that. So appreciate that. I'm also going to shout out Ridiculous Hat personally because he does a great, like World 8 said, he does really good at what he does. And he actually reached out to me personally about something this week, and I'm not going to get into it, but I really appreciate that. As busy as he is, he decided that it was worth reaching out to me directly about something, and it was he's really good at his job. I hope he gets more support and everything. But anyway, guys, I think we're toast. We'll see ya. Have a Have a good night.
All right. See ya. Have a good one.
See ya.
Slide two brothers meet one another when they slide up to the mic. It's bread and butter with one another. Let's start up that recording light.